Hello, this is Joe McGee. Welcome to our podcast. Make sure that you subscribe and please share the podcast with your friends. That is the number one way you can help us reaching people with God's love and healing. We love you guys. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Hey guys, through the Bible, Joe McGee, we're going from Genesis to Revelation chronologically. We're picking up today in the book of Exodus, chapter 8. It's been a great adventure. We've come out of Egypt. Pharaoh and his army have drowned. You know, we've had manna, we've had the pillar of fire, we've had so many miracles, yet the people are still complaining. They just still running their mouth all the time. And so they've come out and they've struck the rock, water's come out. And they said, "Well, you brought us here so we can die of thirst." No, I didn't. God knows exactly what he's doing, Moses will tell them. So anyhow, in Exodus chapter 17, verse 8, while the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, "Choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand." Now, what's he doing? Well, here's what's going to happen. Now, they've never fought anybody. They've been slaves for 400 years. They don't know anything about fighting. They know about complaining and thumb-sucking and griping. They don't know about fighting. God tells Moses, "Okay, get out there tomorrow, and we got these guys that are coming after you. This won't be the first time. It won't be the last time." And said, "I want you to get up on the hill above the valley, take the staff that they've seen you use over and over again, and put it in your hand." So Joshua did what Moses had commanded and fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a nearby hill. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hands, the Israelites had an advantage, but whenever he dropped his hands, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Moses' arms soon became so tired he could no longer hold them up. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. Then they stood, each on each side of Moses, holding his hands. So his hands held steady until sunset. As a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek in battle. After the victory, the Lord instructed Moses, "Write this down on a scroll as a permanent reminder and read it aloud to Joshua. I will erase the memory of Amalek from under heaven." Moses built an altar there and named it Yahweh Nisi, which means "The Lord is my banner. They have raised their fist against the Lord's throne. So now the Lord will be at war with Amalek generation after generation." And man, if you do Bible history, you realize that was true. From that day forward, they were at war the rest of their life. Chapter 18, verse 1, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, heard about everything God had done for Moses and his people, the Israelites. He heard especially how the Lord had rescued them from Egypt. Earlier, Moses had sent his wife Zipporah and his two sons back to Jethro, who would take them in. Moses' first son was named Gershom, for Moses had said when the boy was born, "I have been a foreigner in a foreign land. His second son was named Eleazar. Moses said, "The God of my ancestors was my helper. He rescued me from the sword of Pharaoh." Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, now came to visit Moses in the wilderness. He brought Moses' wife and two sons with him. When they arrived, Moses and the people were camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent a message to Moses. "Hey, I'm your father. I'm coming to see you and your wife and bring your wife and two sons." So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. He bowed low and he kissed him, then asked about each other's welfare. Then they went into Moses' tent. Moses told his father-in-law everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh, to Egypt on behalf of Israel. He told about all the hardships they had experienced along the way, how the Lord had rescued his people from all the troubles. Jethro was delighted when he heard all the good things the Lord had done for the Israelites, how he'd rescued them from the hand of the Egyptians. "Praise the Lord," Jethro said, "for he has rescued you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh." "Yes, he rescued Israel with a powerful hand from Egypt. Know that the Lord is greater than all the gods because he has rescued his people from oppression of the proud Egyptians." Then Jethro said to Moses' father, he brought a burnt offering and sacrificed to God. Aaron and all the elders with us came out and joined him with a sacrificial meal in God's presence. They said, "Hey, It's been good. Let's take a minute and worship God. Let's just thank God. So the next day, Moses took his seat to hear the people's disputes against one another. They waited before him from morning till evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he asked, "What are you really accomplishing here? Why are you still trying to do all this alone when everyone stands around you from morning to evening?" Moses replied, "Because the people come to me to get a ruling from God. When a dispute arises, they come to me, and I'm the one who oversees it, the case between the quarreling parties. I inform the people of God's decrees. I give them his instructions." "This is not good, Moses," the father-in-law exclaimed. "You're going to wear yourself out, and the people too. This job is too heavy a burden for you to handle by yourself. Now listen to me, and I will give you a word of advice. May God be with you. You should continue to be the people's representative before God, bringing their disputes to him. Teach them about God's decrees. Give them his instructions. Show them how to conduct their lives. But select from all the people some capable, honest men who fear God and hate bribes." Now, there is a leadership list right there. Who are you going to try to pick to lead? "Well, I'm going to get some capable men who can do the job. I need capable men. I need honest men who will tell the truth, because you can't fix anything if you're lying about it. I need men who fear God and who hate bribes. Not avoid them, they hate them. They realize what a sin it is. Appoint them as leaders over groups of 1,000, of over 100, over 50, and 10. They should always be available to solve the people's common disputes, but when they have major cases, they can bring them to you. Let the leaders decide the smaller matters themselves. They will help you carry the load, making the task easier for you. If you follow this advice, and if God commands you to do so, then you'll be able to endure the pressures that all the people, they'll go home in peace." Moses listened to his father-in-law's advice, followed the suggestions, chose capable men over all Israel, and appointed them as leaders over his people. He put them in charge of groups of 1,000, and groups of 100, and groups of 50, groups of 10. These men were always available to solve the people's common disputes. They brought the major cases to Moses, but they took care of the smaller matters themselves. And soon after this, Moses said goodbye to his father-in-law, who returned to his own land. Now, that is some of the best advice on leadership I've ever read or heard. I remember I worked on worked in three different wire companies, 4 years each. Worked in start off in common labor. Worked in my position, white collar position. Became a lab technician. Became an engineer. And then I worked in two church staffs, two great church staffs. One had 3,000 people. One had 12,000. But we saw, both in the secular world and on church staff, no one person can handle everything. So we had people, and I remember one church I liked in particular. We have 12 department heads. We have 12 major departments. And so I was over the education department. What does that mean? Well, I'm in charge of Sunday school, everything from adults to kids, the children's ministry, the youth ministry. And so my job is to become an expert at that. So I remember when I got hired, so what am I? So, well, we're hiring you as the education director. I said, what does that person do? We're in charge of education. Well, do you have a curriculum? No, we don't. Well, we need some kind of curriculum. We can't just have a wet bar of soap slipping through our hands. What are we teaching? How do we teach that? Why are we teaching? So my job is to find some good curriculum. Well, then what I did was I realized, well, I need to find some other people that are doing this. So I got on the phone and I called all the local churches that were like us. And I found, I think, 12 of them in town. And I invited every guy or lady to go to lunch. Hey, can I take you to lunch? I'd like to bring one of my staff, and if you can bring all yours, we're going to ask some questions. And what I would do is I'd ask, as education director at your church, what do you do? What are the three most important decisions you make? What are the three greatest benefits of what you get to do? What are the three biggest challenges? So I'd always ask, what are the three things you got to deal with? What's the three things that are benefit? What's the advantage of doing this? What curriculum do you use? Where did you get it? How does it work? How would you change it? And so I went in asking questions. Well, people love to share. And so people say, well, I use this, I do this. So people, how'd you become such a good education director? I went to everybody else that was doing it and asked them how they did it. Now, some ideas were great. Some were not good. Some would work. Some would not work. So I had to adapt that for my church because every church is different. It's like family. You go to the family reunion. No two cousins are the same. Each one has a strength. Each one has a weakness. So I traveled. And I realized, okay, that's work. This will be good. I'll do that. I'll adjust this. I can take that idea, some of that idea. And so we became our own deal. And it worked very, very good. And I remember every year at VBS, we had over 700 kids that would come for a week every day. And so it really worked. People said, how'd you get so smart? I ask other people smarter than me. You know, you want to be wise, you have to walk with wise men, but a companion of fools will be destroyed. So I began to travel. So Moses, father, I realized something. Hey, son, you can't do all this by yourself. You're going to wake up one morning, you'll be dead. You're gone. And when somebody else is going to have to do it. So what we want you to do, we want you to find somebody that can do this for you. So put them in charge of 100, in charge of 50, in charge of 20, in charge of 10. And it worked out really good. So take this as an idea. Find somebody you can hand this stuff off to. Do the important stuff, put those stuff up. Find others that can do that. And you'll live a long time. God bless, guys. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time. Be sure to join us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear more of what God can do in your life. It's got a great future for you and your family, and we're here to help you get there. Please make sure you visit Joe McGee Ministries on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. There you find all of our Friday funny videos and other encouraging resources for you and your family. While you're at it, be sure to visit joemcgee.com. We have all sorts of materials, books, DVDs, you name it, all there to help you, your marriage, and your family succeed.